Okay, so today is a very special day on the Vaishnava calendar. Let me just change my background. See the mess here. That's better. So today is a very special day on the Vaishnava calendar. In the Vaishnava calendar, it's the appearance day of Lord Varaha, the born incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're going to speak about him today, rather than giving our normal class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, without further ado, we will chant Jaya Madhava. Give me a second. Alrighty, here's the guitar.
Baby. Dhanamahamsa
Ayurvedic Acharya, also Tada Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chalana, Dvaktivadana, Gosami, Srila Prabhupada Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Jai, Anantakoti, Vaishnavrindajai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Jai, Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidvaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindika Jai Shishi Radhakrishna Gopi Gopada Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhanika Jai Vrindavanamika Jai Jiradamika Jai Jagannatha Swami Kajai Manamaya Kajai Srimati Lasa Devi Kajai Samveda Bhakta Vrindika Jai Gaur Vrindananda Hari Hari Bhakta. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, Namini Namaste, Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Nivishesha, Sunyavani Pashata Tejatarni. So today we are commemorating, can reiterate, we are commemorating the appearance day of Lord Varaha. It's called Varaha Dwadashi. It's also the Ekadasi fast because Ekadasi overlaps the Dwadashi, and so you celebrate the Ekadasi on the Dwadashi with fasting. So anyway, there's fasting today, but today is over, so almost over. So it's a fast half day on Varaha Dwadasi. So we're going to speak a little bit about Lord Varaha and his appearance, if that's all right with everybody. So, Omagana Timadandasha Gananjana Shlagaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorancia. So now, we're going to speak about Lord Varaha. Of course, just to start the conversation, if that's all right with everybody, we should understand. And let me put my chat window up because I want to see our chats in case someone asks a question. Give me a second. There we go. All right. Chat window's up there. Somebody has any problems. But don't ask a question until I'm finished, please. So, anyway, so just to start off this whole discussion, Lord Varaha is none different than Krishna, as we hear in the Brahma Sanghita, and I've quoted this verse so many times that I think most of you should remember this by now. Advaita Chuta Nadi Rananta Rupa Majum Purana Purusham Labhyovanam Cha Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. That God is one. Advaita, we specifically talked about this in regard to Advaita Acharya's appearance, but let us also talk about this in regard to all the other Vishnu Tattva incarnations of the Lord. Vishnu Tattva, Tattva is a category, a thatness. It's a category. So Vishnu Tattva means God. And there's one God, and he comes in a variety of ways, just like any actor. Here's an example I haven't used that often. If you have a famous actor, Bollywood, Hollywood, whatever actor, and then the actor can portray different characters at different times, but it's always the same person underneath the character, right? So Krishna, when he's not acting, he's Krishna Vrindavan, and when he's acting, he's playing different roles, and Lord Varaha is one of those roles, and Karma, and all these other Vishnu Tattva incarnations. There are different roles of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the interesting thing about Krishna Because when he plays different roles, he can play all those roles simultaneously in different locations, infinitely, infinite places, infinite times, infinite circumstances, infinite forms. It's unbelievable. So that's God. Therefore, it's a chincha. Therefore, he's unlimited. Therefore, he's God. So you just got to accept that on faith. You know, like the cobbler devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, basically, God can actually put a whole tree into a seed. So that's amazing. So there's nothing God can't do. Otherwise, if there was something God couldn't do, he wouldn't be God, and that thing that he couldn't do would probably be more powerful than him. Just like the Mayavadis, one thing they say is illusion has overcome God. So if illusion can overcome God, then he ain't God. Okay, remember that. Okay. So let's get into the story of the appearance of Lord Varaha. And we understand he fought with the demon Hiranyaksha, so that story is connected with the story of Lord Varaha. And somewhat the story of Hiranyakashipu is connected because Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu had the same parents. They were brothers, Bratashri, Matashri, Bratashri, Pitashri. Okay, here's the story, and it's, like I said, it's very similar to the story of the appearance of Hiranyakashipu, the story of, anyway. Okay, let's go. So once upon a time, there was the mother of the demons. Her name was Diti. And she felt really lusty. And so she was thinking, where's my husband? And her husband, of course, is Kashyapa Muni. And she became so lusty, she was grabbing at his cloth like this, you know. And he tried to pacify her, said, no, this is not appropriate. Why is it not appropriate? Because the mentality of the parents at the time of conception and the surrounding auspicious or inauspicious factors influence what type of child they're going to get. Now, there's two things that go into a child's psychology, mentality, proclivities. One is the nature. Nature means what they're born with. In other words, that comes from what type of soul was attracted to coming into the mother's womb because of the parent's mentality at the time of conception. Mentality. So if they're lusty, you get a lusty soul. And if they're Krishna conscious, you get a Krishna conscious soul. Simple as that. You attract. It's the law of attraction. One law of attraction. So anyway, so Kashyapa tried to pacify her and say, you know, it's not the right mood, not the right time. This time you're going to get in trouble because Lord Shiva is going around in this time. And you better hold it. And she was just determined. And they had a relationship. And Diti knew that she had done something wrong. And she prayed that her embryo would not be killed by Lord Shiva. So her embryo was not going to be killed by Lord Shiva, nor was her child going to be killed by Lord Shiva. But Kashyapa, her husband, said, you know, he's a great Brahmin. He said, actually, they will be demons, your children. You're going to have two children. And they're going to be demons. And Diti was thinking, yeah, it's better they're killed by Krishna than by Lord Shiva, because if they're killed by Krishna, they're liberated. So she became pregnant, and there was darkness, and the demigods got all worried, and they asked Lord Vishnu, you know, what's happening here? Why is there so much darkness in the universe? And then Lord Krishna, or Lord Vishnu, responded with the story of Jai and Vijay. Jaya and Vijaya, of course, are the two gatekeepers of Vaikuntha. And these two gatekeepers of Vaikuntha were guarding the seventh gate. Sometimes you hear about seven gates to heaven or something like that. Even in the Western world, you hear about the seven gates. So anyway, so once upon a time, the four Kumaras, and we've been talking about the Kumaras in our Chaitanya Charitamrita class, how they were Brahmavadis, remember yesterday's class, and they became attracted to Lord Vishnu by smelling the tulsi leaves and flowers offered at his lotus feet. So they were on their way to see Lord Vishnu. This is before they actually became pure devotees. So on the way to see Lord Vishnu, they went past through these heavenly gates, or the gates to Vaikuntha. Let's say the gates to Vaikuntha, not really heaven. So they passed through the gates to Vaikuntha. Six of them they went through, and of the seventh, they were stopped by Jai and Vijay. And they got really angry at Jai and Vijay. Said, you know, what is this? You are acting like demons, in spite of being the doorkeepers of the Lord's abode, you are actually acting like demons and stopping some innocent young personalities. You belong in the material world. We curse you to take birth in the material world. So there was a big ruckus, and in the meantime, Lord Vishnu comes, and the four Kumaras smell the tulsi leaves and flowers offered at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, and they become devotees. And Lord Vishnu says, you curse them properly, so I'm not going to negate your curse, so let's give them a choice. They can take three births as Jaya and Vijaya, three births as demons, or seven births as devotees. So they were thinking, we want to, what, become demons. Why? So we can go back to Godhead sooner. You have to take seven births as devotees. It's nice being a devotee, actually. So I don't know why they didn't choose that. But it was the Lord's plan. This whole thing occurred because Krishna wanted them to be cursed. Why? Because Krishna likes to engage in different exchanges, loving exchanges or rasas with his devotees. So when Krishna fights someone on this earth, he really prefers to fight with a devotee. Why is that? Because this is the chivalrous relationship. And, you know, Krishna doesn't like as much the fight with demons, but he does that sometimes too. But he likes to fight with devotees. So, actually, there was one demon that Krishna didn't even want to touch. And he wanted to kill him because he was such a low class. His name is Kalyavana. So what happened is that Kalyavana approached Krishna to asking him to fight, and Krishna just ran away. And Krishna ran into a cave, and Kalyavana followed him into this cave. And when he went into the cave, Kalyavana saw there was someone lying on the ground covered by a cloth that looked like Krishna's cloth. So Kalyavana got very angry, thinking, that's Krishna, he's just a coward, he's just trying to hide. So he kicked the person who was lying on the ground. The person got up and looked at Kalyavana with his eyes, and he burnt Kalyavana to ashes. That person was called Muchukunda, not Muchikunda. Muchikunda would mean a dirty lake, but Muchukunda. So anyway, so... And the reason that person was able to burn Kalyavana with his glance is that he had been fighting for the demigods previously and gotten really tired. And the demigods gave him a benediction that whoever woke him up could be burnt into ashes by his glance. So in other words, Krishna didn't really want to personally kill the demon. He just thought, you know, this demon is just too low class for me. So Krishna prefers to fight with devotees. Because this is just like if you want to play tennis or baseball or, you know, any sport, cricket, and unless you're a professional,
you'll actually want to do it with friends. You'll ask your friends. I remember when I was young, I would play baseball. And I go to my friends and say, you know, want to come out and play baseball. I wouldn't go to my enemies and play baseball with them. So Krishna comes to his friends, who are servants, and he plays, not exactly baseball. I guess Krishna must have an incarnation that he plays baseball in. But, you know, he has this fighting exchange, and you may say, this is terrible, he's killing. But he's not killing. We're not these bodies. His devotees are not their bodies. The demons are not their bodies. No one is the body. If you think you're the body, you haven't learned the ABCs of Krishna consciousness. So anyway, so these personalities, Jaya and Vijaya, wanted to take birth as demons. Why do people call me on it? People have this very nice sense of timing to call me in the middle of class. So, see, getting back to the story. So they said, we'll take birth as demons. And so what happened is that there were inauspicious omens before they appeared. There were earthquakes. There were jackals howling. Actually, she-jackals howling. Usually the she-jackals are a little quiet. There was blood coming from the cows rather than milk. The deities were crying. Oh my God, how's that possible? The planets were going in retrograde. Now that's an astrological phenomenon where the planets seem to go backwards because of the relative movements of the different planets. I'm not going to get into what that means exactly. Then the demons appeared. So Hiranyaksha, he was the younger one. Hiranyakashipu was the older one. And the first thing he did is when he appeared, he went to heaven with his club, and the demigods ran away. And he was thinking, I got to fight, you know, I want to fight. No one's willing to fight with me. Even these demigods, they're just like hopeless, helpless and hopeless. I thought I asked everybody not to put anything in the chat window until I finish. Please don't do that, because it's just like, it actually diverts me from the class. So anyway, so... But I do keep it open. It's in case there is some technical difficulty. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So, then he went to Varuna, who was one of the demigods, to fight. And Varuna, he didn't want to fight him. He understood that Krishna was supposed to fight him. And Varuna said, I'm just too old to fight. You should fight with Vishnu and you will be killed by him. And so at this point, Hiranyaksha was thinking, where is this Vishnu? So naturally, if you want to find out where Vishnu is, you have to ask your spiritual master. So he didn't ask his spiritual master, because Shukracharya is the spiritual master of the demons, but he asked Ashiksha Guru Nardamuni, where is Vishnu? Where is Vishnu? So he asked Nardamuni where Vishnu was. So Vishnu was supposed to be, according to Narada Muni, Vishnu was supposed to be in the ocean, not the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, or the Arctic Ocean. He was in the Garbhodak Ocean, because this happened within this universe. There's different oceans, of course. He was in the Garbhodak Ocean. And what was he doing in the Garbhodak Ocean? Well, swimming as a Lord Boar. And why was he swimming as Lord Boar? Because he was picking the earth up from the nether regions. In other words, the earth had gone down in this ocean. Because they try to understand, the Garbhodak Ocean is not just water like we know it. You know, you just think, well, where's the water in the universe? It's a far more subtle ethereal type of element. You don't think that there's like H2O filling up half the universe. So then Varaha said, not Varaha, sorry, his demon Hiranyaksha saw him with the earth, and he said, "The earth is ours." And Krishna, that is Lord Varaha, placed the earth on this water, the Garbhodak ocean, and it ensued a big fight. And this fight was more or less like fun for Lord Varaha. So he was basically playing with it. Maybe if we have time in this class, I can read some of the interactions from the Bhagavatam. I pulled out that particular chapter. We can put it on the screen later. So he began to fight and play. And Lord Rama said, stop playing with him. You know, he was giving Lord Brahma some anxiety. Lord Brahma knew he was God, but still, sometimes, you know, because of rasa, because of the leela, even the devotees get an anxiety. Lord Brahma said, stop fighting with him. Krishna laughed and fought. At one particular point, the Lord's mace fell down, and the demon said, pick it up, you know, this is chivalry. So these demons, it's not that they were just like really low-class demons. Of course, they're low-class. But they're not really like without any rules. They respected rules of combat. So they were enjoying the chivalrous exchange. It wasn't just like some dogs biting each other. It was a fun experience for both of them. That reminds me of the story when Krishna and Arjuna and Bhimsen went to conquer Jarasandha. Now, Jarasandha was a very interesting personality, you know, low class too, because he was going to kill a whole bunch of kings and offer them to sacrifice, as sacrifice. But still, when Jarasandha was fighting with Bhimsen, every night they would stop and they would all eat together. Hopefully it was prasadam. They would all eat together and joke, and during the day they would fight, and they would only fight during certain times from sunrise to sunset. So it wasn't just like a no-rules battle. These things were extremely chivalrous and fun for all of the participants. So what happened is at one particular point, Krishna took out the Siddharshana. The demon threw his mace, and Krishna kicked it away. Then he caught his mace, and he tried to kill Krishna with it, Krishna or Lord Brahma with a trident. That trident was pierced or cut to pieces by Siddharshana. Then the demon disappeared and had more magic, black magic, and there were stones and pus and blood and everything like that, and even naked demonesses that appeared to bewilder Lord Brahma. Of course, Lord Brahma can never be bewildered. But Krishna used a Sudarshana. The word Sudarshana means very auspicious vision. And so when Krishna used the Sudarshana, it not only cuts off people's heads, which is an interesting thing, but it also creates an auspicious vision and dispels all sorts of black magic and everything like that, which is interesting also for us. Like, I know many devotees are very much worried, very, very worried about black magic and curses and everything like that. But when you chant the Lord's holy names, black magic can't affect you. Ghosts can't affect you. Curses can't affect you. You know, you just have to have faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. So there's Sudarshan, because the devotees are always protected by Krishna's Sudarshan chakra. So anyway, I'm just looking at my watch, just checking the time, make sure we have enough time. So then, then it came time for the demon to be killed, and blood started to flow, not from the demon, but from Diti's breast, because the mother is so much attached to the son that practically there's an invisible connection between the mother and the son, and the mother and the daughter. Prabhupada said the mother's love for the son or daughter is the closest thing to pure love in this material world. So then, obviously, then what happened? The demon embraced Krishna, and Krishna, the Lord Brahma, Krishna. So then he looked, he embraced him, he tried to crush him, and then Krishna appeared outside of his embrace, and then Krishna slapped him, boop, in the root of his ear, it means in the bottom of the ear, and the demon died. Wow. That's really interesting. Okay. So now, I guess we have times. Now I'm going to read some verses from the Bhagavatam. I guess I'm going to share the screen, which is actually a good idea. So we're going to share the screen and read these verses from the Bhagavatam to glorify Lord Brahma's appearance. I did a compilation. Hold on a second. I will find them in a second. Here they are. Okay, so let's share the screen. Yeah. And let me, hold on a second, I have to put the chat window somewhere so I can read, otherwise I will not be able to read this, because it will cover the verses. Okay, so this is from the third canto, 13th chapter, text 1, beginning with text 1, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This deals with the appearance of Lord Brahma. Of course, we understand that Lord Brahma actually appeared from the nose of Lord Brahma. Quite an unusual appearance. So, let's read this. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, after hearing all those most virtuous topics from the sage Maitreya, Vidura inquired further on the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which he adored to hear. Let me just go a little ahead with this. Hold on a second. We don't have that much time. Oh, here we go. Okay, it starts with Manu. Shri Manu said, O all-powerful Lord, O killer of all sins, I shall abide by your order. He's talking to Lord Brahma. Now, please know, let me know my place and that of all the living entities born of me. O Master of the demigods, please attempt to lift the earth, which is merged in the great water, because it is the dwelling place for all living entities, if it can be done by your endeavor and by the mercy of the Lord. So in other words, Lord Brahma was thinking, how am I going to lift the earth planet up? Sri Maitreya said, thus seeing the earth merge in the water, Brahma gave his attention for a long time to how it could be lifted. Brahma thought, while I've been engaged in the process of creation, the earth has been inundated by a deluge and has gone down to the depths of the ocean. What can we do who are engaged in the matter of creation? It is best to let the Almighty Lord direct us. O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. O descendant of Bharata, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation, as a gigantic as a great elephant. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with the great demigods like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb, and within a moment he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. The omnipotent Supreme Personality of Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmanas by again roaring with his uncommon voice, which echoed in all the directions. When the great sages and thinkers who are residents of Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satchaloka heard the tumultuous voice of Lord Babur, which was the all-auspicious sound of the all-merciful Lord, they chanted auspicious chants from the three Vedas. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Before entering the water to rescue the earth, Lord Boar flew in the sky, slashing his tail, his hard hairs quivering. His very glance was luminous, and he scattered the clouds in the sky with his hooves and his glittering white tusks. He was personally the Supreme Lord Vishnu and was therefore transcendental. Yet because he had the body of a hog, he searched after the earth by smell. His tusks were fearful, and he glanced over the devotee Brahmanas engaged in offering prayers. Thus he entered the water, diving into the water like a great mountain. Lord Boar divided the middle of the ocean, and the two high waves appeared as the arms of the ocean, which cried loudly as if praying to the Lord, O Lord of all sacrifices, please do not cut me in two. Kindly give me protection. Lord Boar penetrated the water with his hooves, which were like sharp arrows, and found the limits of the ocean. Although it was unlimited, he saw the earth, the resting place for all living beings, lying as it was in the beginning of creation, and he personally lifted it. Lord Boar very easily took the earth on his tusks and got it out of the water. Thus he appeared very splendid. Then his anger glowing like the Sudarshana wheel, he immediately killed the demon Hiranyaksha, although he tried to fight with the Lord. Thereupon Lord Boar killed the demon within the water, just as a lion kills an elephant. The cheeks and tongue of the Lord became smeared with the blood of the demon, just as an elephant becomes reddish from digging in the purple earth. Then the Lord, playing like an elephant, suspended the earth on the edge of his curved white tusks. He assumed a bluish complexion like that of a tamal tree, and thus the sages headed by Brahma could understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer him respectful obeisances. All the sages uttered with great respect, O unconquerable enjoyer of all sacrifices, all glories and all glories unto you. Your moving and your form are the personified Vedas, and the hair holes of your body, the oceans are submerged. And in the hair holes, of your body, the oceans are submerged. For certain reasons, to uplift the earth, you have assumed now the form of the boar. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri, and others are in the touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kucha grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter. And in your four legs are the four kinds of furtive activities. O Lord, your tongue is the plate of sacrifice. Your nostril is another plate of sacrifice, and your belly is the eating place of sacrifice. And another plate of sacrifice is the holes of your ears. In your mouth is the brahma plate of sacrifice. Your throat is the plate of sacrifice known as soma, and whatever you chew is known as agnihotra. This is a description, of course, of the Lord, actually in terms of one aspect of the universal form, how the Lord's body and the Lord's manifestation is in one sense everything, and of course the Lord has a transcendental body, and the Lord's Bohr's body is transcendental, is separate from everything, but this is a way to see how God exists in terms of his energies. Moreover, O Lord, the repetition of your appearance is the desire for all kinds of initiation. Your neck is the place for three desires, and your tusks are the result of initiation and the end of all desires. Your tongue is the prior activities of initiation. Your head is the fire without sacrifice, as well as the fire of worship, and your living forces are the aggregate of all desires. O Lord, your semen is the sacrifice called Soma Yajna. Your growth is the ritualistic performances of the morning. Your skin and touch sensations are the seven elements of the Agni. Stoma sacrifice, your bodily joints, are symbols of the various other sacrifices performed in 12 days. Therefore, you are the object of all sacrifices called Soma and Asoma, and you are bound by yajnas only. O Lord, you are the supreme personality of Godhead and are worshipable by universal prayers, Vedic hymns, and sacrificial ingredients. We offer our obeisances unto you. You can be realized by the pure mind, freed from all visible and invisible material contamination. We offer our respectful obeisances to you as the supreme spiritual master of knowledge and devotional service. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and non-moving, this earth is your wife, and you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you, along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency, just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the orani wood. Whoops. I keep skipping here. Who else but you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. O Supreme Lord, undoubtedly we are inhabitants of the most pious planets, the Jana, Tapas, and Satchalokas, but still we have been purified by the drops of water sprinkled from your shoulder hairs by the shaking of your body. O Lord, there is no limit to your wonderful activities. Anyone who desires to know the limit of your activities is certainly nonsensical. Everyone in this world is conditioned by the powerful mystic potencies. Please bestow your causeless mercy upon these conditioned souls. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves, placed it on the water. In this manner, the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, the maintainer of all living entities, raised the earth from within the water, and having placed it afloat in the water, he returned to his own abode. If one hears and describes in a devotional service attitude this auspicious narration of Lord Bohr, which is worthy of description, the Lord, who is within the heart of everyone, is very, very pleased. Nothing remains unachieved when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased by someone. By transcendental achievement, one understands that everything else is insignificant. One who engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is elevated into the highest perfectional stage by the Lord himself who is seated in everyone's heart. Who other than one who is not a human being can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of God at activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? So there's a little bit more here. Okay, we'll read a little bit more. So this is actually from the 18th chapter of the third canto. Maitreya continued, the proud and falsely glorious Daitya, that's Hiranyaksha, paid little heed to the words of Varuna. We told this story about he went to Varuna first. Oh dear Vidura, he learned from Narada the whereabouts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and hurriedly betook himself to the depths of the ocean. He saw there the all-powerful Personality of Godhead in his poor incarnation, bearing the earth upward on the ends of his tusks, and robbing him of his splendor with his reddish eyes. The demon laughed. Ugh! An amphibious beast! The demon addressed the Lord, O best of the demigods, dressed in the form of a boar, just hear me. The earth is entrusted to us, the inhabitants of the lower regions, and you cannot take it from my presence and not be hurt by me. You rascal! You've been nourished by our enemies to kill us, and you have killed some demons by remaining invisible. So in other words, he's calling God all these names. Oh fool, your power is only mystic. So today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you. The demon continued, when you fall dead with your skull smashed by the mace hurled by my arms, the demigods and sages who offer you oblations and sacrifice and devotional service will also automatically cease to exist, like trees without roots. Although the Lord was pained by the shaft-like abusive words of the demon, he bore the pain, but seeing that the earth on the ends of his tusks was frightened, he rose out of the water just as an elephant emerges with its female companions when assailed by an alligator. The demon, who had golden hair, so he had blonde hair, on his head and fearful tusks, gave chase to the Lord while he was rising from the water, even as an alligator would chase an elephant. Roaring like thunder, he said, are you not ashamed of running away before a challenging adversary? There is nothing reproachable for shameless creatures. The Lord placed the earth within his sight on the surface of the water and transferred to her his own energy in the form of the ability to float in the water. While the enemy stood looking on, Brahma, the creator of the universe, extolled the Lord, and the other demigods rained flowers on him. So, actually, we should take some questions. So, what you see here, very chivalrous activities, like, you see the demon calling the Lord names, and the Lord will call the demon names. And in this way, they're going back and forth, just playfully engaged with each other. So this is like this is a Leela. And the demon is also enjoying, of course the demon's actually a devotee, the demon's enjoying this Leela, and the Lord is enjoying the Leela. You may say, how is a demon enjoying the Leela? Well, this is chivalry. When people are in a chivalrous mood, you enjoy fights. Even if you lose, you enjoy the fight. Okay. So now we will end the sharing and take some questions. And the first question was Jai Radhika, who asked in the middle of class. Hold on a second, let me unmute you. So, Jai and Jai agreed to become demons to return hell back to home quickly in three births. However, as demons they merge into Krishna, as they use your mukti for which I thought destination to be Brahmacharya. Yes. They, in between births, they merge and then they just pop right out again for the next birth. They had to do something in the meantime. They weren't going to go back to the spiritual world because they had to wait three births. And actually, it's mentioned that these three personalities took birth as Jagai and Madai. And that was their, you may say, the fourth birth. But Jagai and Madai got association with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so that was like being in the spiritual world. So when you hear about these demons, you may think, you know, especially the demons who are devotees, why does the Lord put them into such a miserable circumstance? Well, tell you the truth, Aranyaksha was not suffering. He was enjoying this interaction with the Lord. That's lila. That's chivalry, one of the indirect rasas. And there's anger, one of the indirect rasas. There's humor, one of the indirect rasas. There's ghastliness, one of the indirect rasas. So he's enjoying that, just like Ravana enjoyed that indirect rasa with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we shouldn't look at even the demons' consciousness, that is, demons who were devotees in essence, we shouldn't look at them from a materialistic perspective, because it's not really like that. Their consciousness is Krishna consciousness. Try to understand that. So we have another question by Gopal Das. Oh, that's good. So what's the question, Mr. Das?
In these verses in the Bhagavatam, Aranyaksha was talking about his kinsmen and how Lord Vishnu had killed them or harassed them in various ways. But Aranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were said to be the two first demons in the universe. So how could they
have... That's a good question. Diti is actually the mother of all the demons. Just to fill you in, Diti is actually the mother of the demons, and Hiranyaksha was actually the first demon in the universe. It was probably some previous day of Lord Brahma. I mean, that would be my speculation. Previous day of Lord Brahma that this occurred. So, I mean, that's how I would explain it.
Thank you.
So you have to ask some expert if that was the right explanation. Did Hiranyaksha submerge the earth by itself, submerged in the Garbhodak Ocean? That's an interesting question too. Like Prabhupada sort of indicated that Hiranyaksha was like the modern day people who drill for oil in the earth and they disturb the earth's balance and the earth goes down. Although that's not there in the verses. In one of Prabhupada's purport, he doesn't indicate that it was something to do with Hiranyaksha's actions. So that's very interesting. Obviously, if Prabhupada said that, there's something there from the Acharyas, because Prabhupada doesn't speculate, obviously. So Prabhupada is citing one of the Acharyas so that it would appear that Hiranyaksha had something to do with the earth being submerged. And why did the earth, you know, because Prabhupada talks about the modern day people who mine the earth or drill for oil in the earth, and it disturbs, and it is true, actually, when you drill into the earth, I mean, even scientifically, it would disturb the rotation of the earth to a certain extent. And we are disturbing the earth to a great extent. Could you please explain how one can be born as perspiration? As mentioned, Jaya Kadasi Kata. I'm not so familiar with that. But, you know, if one could be born, I'm not familiar with all these Akadi Kadasi ritualistic books. It's not one of my things. But anyway, if someone could be born from the nose of Lord Brahma, if Krishna could be born from the nose, and entities are born from perspiration all the time, of course the microbes are already there, then certainly that's not inconceivable. So, next one. How is Narada Muni Hiranyaksha's Shiksha Guru? Well, Shiksha Guru means, Shiksha means he gave him instruction. He's not an eternal Shiksha Guru, but any guru who gives you instruction is a Shiksha Guru. Shiksha means instruction. And he's guru. So, Shiksha Guru. It's not that, you know, sometimes we have Shiksha Guru for a particular occasion, and sometimes someone is our deep, devoted, not devoted, but we are deeply devoted. Here's another one. Yes, there's two incarnate, four incarnations, white and red, and I'm not aware of all the details with both of those. You'll have to look that up. I'm sure if you could, you look it up. No, Bhagavatam doesn't really get into so much detail about that, and I'm primarily presenting things from the Bhagavatam, but I know that there are two different four incarnations, perhaps in the Acharya's commentaries that's mentioned. So, anyway, so Lord Boar appears, or Krishna appears, as a red boar and a white boar, Shveta. And also there's the combined incarnation of Araha and Nrsingha too, one you don't even know about. There's actually a deity of Araha and Nrsingha in Andhra Pradesh, and this deity is covered with sandalwood all year round. They cover it with sandalwood. And Prabhupada was asked, why do you cover him with sandalwood? Why does he look like a Shiva Linga? Because it's so much covered with layers and layers and layers of sandalwood. And they only uncover him once a year. And Prabhupada answered, to keep his head cool, because he's so angry. So that's an interesting thing. Yeah, it's not that I know everything. I know Krishna, Yasmin Vigyate, Sarvamevam Vigyatam Bhavati. Okay, any other questions? Does anyone else have questions? No. Well, I know the purpose of everything. But, you know, a lot of this ritualistic stuff, you know, that's mentioned in these Ekadasi books, which Prabhupada never really got into. And it's not really the mood of his divine grace of the Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada considered preaching to be the most important thing. And of course, Prabhupada did follow Ekadasi, did not eat grains or beans on Ekadasi. But Prabhupada had special preparations made on Ekadasi, and he preached Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada really personally didn't get into this esoteria. Well, there's things that I don't know that do matter. But as far as becoming Krishna conscious, I think I know that if you serve Prabhupada, you will get everything. You get the mercy of Prabhupada. So the Prabhupada never really touched upon this minutia, and nowadays people get into a lot of these minutia things, you know, these little details that really have very little or nothing to do with what we have to do in Krishna consciousness. How were the Kumaras qualified to enter Vaikuntha? Could they have the developed devotion yet before smelling what? Can they enter Vaikuntha just being free of desires? They didn't actually, they entered the six gates, but they didn't enter the inner portion of Vaikuntha. They were still on the outside of Vaikuntha, because before you can get into Vaikuntha, you got to go through seven gates. It's not, so, you know, they're put like preliminary gates. Like if you go to a prison, I've done some prison preaching, before you can actually enter the prison, usually they have at least two or three different layers of security or gates. And there's different guards or security at each gate, and there's that barbed wire overhead. So it's something like that. You know, you can't enter Vaikuntha being free of desires. The only way you can enter Vaikuntha is with bhakti, and they got bhakti when they smelled the tulsi leaves and the flowers offered the lotus feet of the Lord, and then they were able to enter Vaikuntha. Okay, on that happy note, I have a dinner engagement, so we'll see everybody tomorrow, same time, same station. Tomorrow is Sunday, and we have our Sunday feast program. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta.